Worked with Wildfire Partners probably 4 years ago.
Oh, really?
I got my certificate.
Awesome.
You know, I think back in 2016.
Oh, great. Yeah,
the beginning of the program.
Nice. That's when we did it, too, was at the very beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, I always have to tell people, like, we don't kick you out, you know.
It's definitely an ongoing process.
Yeah. Now, if you move to the desert, then we probably would kick you out.
If you bought an island in the middle of the Indian Ocean?
Maybe,
or more,
right.
Still be allowed to
kick you out if you want to. So, but no, because there's people that will call or email and they're like, well, I got my assessment back in 2014. I don't know if I'm still in the program. I'm like, yeah, you're still in the program.
Yeah. Actually, I had my son who lives on Sugarloaf. Mm-hmm. He went into the program about a year ago and mm-hmm. got his certificate.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Cool. A family thing.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, we've got a couple more jumping in here. So we're going to do a little intro. And we thought if it's not more than a dozen people, which we thought we'd let you introduce yourself as well. And so we'll do a little intro and then we'll let people introduce themselves as well. So I guess I'll get things rolling here, Abby. So
sounds good.
Yeah. All right. So
it is 7 o'clock on the news.
It is 7 o'clock. So, my name's Leslie Broadhead, and I am Program Specialist Outreach Coordinator Person with Wildfire Partners. And for a lot of you, especially if you've called or emailed in the last couple of years, you may recognize my name or my voice, because I'm usually the one who's talking to people on the phone or responding to emails that you send if you email the info@wildfirepartners.org email. And I'm here today with one of our mitigation specialists, Abby Silver. Would you like to do a quick intro, Abby?
Sure. I'm Abby Silver. I am, as Leslie said, one of the mitigation specialists. And I've been with the program since 2014 when it started. And I'm now also working for Boulder County as a mitigation specialist. So if you're either getting a building permit or if you're just getting a Wildfire Partners assessment, there is a pretty good chance that you've met me somewhere along the lines. And we are excited to be here with you on a snowy evening, although full confession, I'm on the East Coast tonight, so it's not snowy where I am. But I'm very happy to see snow in Boulder, I'll tell you that.
One of the bonuses of remote working, you can basically work from anywhere, right, as long as there's an internet connection, right? So, we're just going to do a little quick review of how we conduct this event, and then, we're going to ask you for a quick intro as well. So, we do want to let you know that we record audio for our events to post on our website. A lot of people have other commitments, and they can't necessarily attend, but they like to listen to our event afterwards, so we just wanted to let you know that. If you're not familiar with Zoom, or maybe you are familiar with Zoom, so the way we take questions, and some people did email us ahead of time, so we'll let you know that, but there's a little chat bar on the chat bubble, I guess, on the bottom of your screen, and it's kind of in the middle there. And so if you have a question, you can just click on that, and you can either type your question, or you can, Abby just put in something there, or you can just say, I have a question, and I will call on you. So that's how we're going to field the questions so that we don't have people talking over each other. So just to let you know that. If you're not asking a question, we would recommend that you mute your microphone. In my house, we have dogs that love to announce their presence to everyone who's walking down the road. And that can be sort of disruptive. So the little microphone icon is in the lower left-hand corner, and when it's muted, it has a red line through it. So we just suggest that if you're not engaging in discussion or asking a question, you do that. So our event's scheduled to last 1 hour, so we'll start to wrap up things at around 7:55. Almost got the time wrong. And we want to let you know you're free to come and go as you choose. So, you know, if you want to listen in, if you want to, like, wash your dishes to listen in, or if you want to listen for, you know, 20 or 30 minutes and then you got something to do and you want to drop out at that point, that's fine. So you can come and go. You can feel free to also, if you've got a great idea on something we're talking about and you're like, hey, I did this, we love to hear your ideas as well. We've gotten a lot of great ideas from our homeowners that we weren't even aware of. So we would encourage you to share if you have some of that. So with that, that's kind of pretty much all the, I want to say housekeeping because that's what I would do in a normal meeting. But, you know, the protocols, I'll just say it that way. And, yeah, we love to know who's with us tonight. So if you want to just give your first name and, you know, kind of the general area where you live. I live in Netter, by the way, full disclosure, and Abby lives in Sunshine Canyon. So we are not only working for the program, but we are homeowners in the wildfire zone as well. Where you live and how long you've lived here, you know, just to give us an idea of, you know, your experience in the wildfire zone. So I know this might be hard because everybody's screen isn't arranged the same way. So I'm just going to call on what I see. I see Sturts.
Yeah, so I'm happy to share. We've been up in Boulder Heights for 14 years. We actually split our time between Portland, Oregon, which is where we are today, and Boulder. We began the program, as I mentioned before, at the very beginning when Wildfires Partners actually started and got our certification about a year later.
Great.
And I go by Rob.
Rob, okay, great. Well, we're glad you're here with us tonight, Rob. And then I see a screen that says Ginger Drake, so.
Yeah, I'm not Ginger Drake. That's my wife.
Okay.
I'm Rodney Derrick. We live sort of halfway between Pine Cliff and Netherland.
Oh, yeah.
Off County Road 99 on North Beaver Road. And I'm in the process, you know, I've done the paperwork and filled out the waiver forms and things, but just haven't set up the appointment to get an assessment. So hopefully this fall we'll get an assessment. And we heat with wood, so we've got, you know, about this time of year we're trying to get three or four cords of wood stacked up and stored around the house. So I'm here to learn about how to do that safely.
You know, interestingly enough, we are going to be talking about firewood tonight. So because, you know, with the snow, I'm sure a lot of us are getting our wood stoves going. And, you know, that's a question we actually got from somebody who's with us. So I'm glad that you're sussing things out here and that you're with us tonight. Okay, the next person I see on my screen is Percy Lopez.
Hello, Leslie. My name is Percy. My wife is behind me. She's doing some weaving.
Okay.
We are on the Peak Highway at mile marker 46, more or less, down by Beaver Road. We just got into the program in June, July, and we cut all the designated trees, and we have been busy all summer removing duff, and we've been doing chinking that they should recommend it, putting in cement board around the baseboard of the house, and we need to determine how far out of the away from the house we need to set up at a gravel perimeter. And that's
barrier.
One of the questions I will have. You can answer repeatedly. Mm-hmm.
You have been very busy for someone who just got in the program. So huge thumbs up for you. That's awesome. So
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks to COVID.
Oh, yeah.
My wife's COVID. Yeah.
I heard Home Depot's business is up like 40% or something like that. Yeah. Everybody's working away on their house. Okay. I see Jonathan Ward. Jonathan Ward?
He doesn't have, speaker isn't working, and
okay,
he's the one who sent those
Jonathan,
very challenging questions.
Yeah, Jonathan, feel free to use the chat if you want to ask questions, okay? And we'll read your questions, our comments.
He's the one who emailed those questions yesterday.
Awesome. Okay. I see someone that just says iPad with no visual, so I don't know if they can unmute and introduce themselves or if they just also have no audio. So I'll give them a moment. Okay. I think they're just listening. All right. Mike Skrutsky, are you wanting to introduce yourself?
Sure. Let me see if I can turn on the camera without zorching all my bandwidth. That's why
yeah, I know that's
give it a whirl. This is me. I live on Ridge Road in Ned near Rocky Knob. I'm a part-timer, so I'm in Charlottesville right now where I teach at the University of Virginia. My wife is actually out there in Ned right now. I'm a chronic mitigator, so every year for the past 10 years, I've hauled tons of stuff off the property but never quite gotten there, so I think we're going to go the wildfire partners route fairly soon. My badge of courage is this COVID break. I got 80 bags of pine needles, full-size yard bags out to the sort wow. yard, a ton of truckloads of slash, too. So I encourage you all to haul away.
Mike, that is great. Mike, you and I are neighbors. I live on Cougar Run, so I'm just down the road from you, just to let you know. So
when I'm there, we walk every night up Ridge Road to the east, you know, all the way to the end and back.
Yeah,
so you probably pass.
We have a couple of dogs. I'm sure we've probably passed some. And FYI, I went to William & Mary. So, you know, also uh-huh. from the state of Virginia. So, great.
And I have to say, I also know Ginger Drake because I fly stratospheric balloons with NASA. And we've had conversations about putting payloads together. So I just thought I'd mention that. Say hi to Ginger.
Super cool.
Yes, as I said earlier, I'm not Ginger. I'm Rodney, her husband.
No, I understand. But I bet you know where she is. So.
All right. So next we have Chris Olson.
Hello. I'm Chris Olson. I've been in Boulder Heights since about February, and we got our assessment and spent a long several weeks doing our mitigation work. And now I'm trying to help my in-laws who have a place up near Red Feather try to panically mitigate around their property right now.
Great. Great. Well, good to have you with us tonight. Christine, not to be confused with Chris. There's a Christine and a Chris. I heard something. All right. Well, hopefully she's getting herself connected. Oh, there she is.
Hi.
Hi.
So, I've been doing a lot of cutting this year through the Forest Ag Program and ultimately had to do about a 2-acre clear cut because the overstory of mistletoe was just out of control. You guys have been here, and the one thing I haven't done, and I don't know if I can, is plug woodpecker holes.
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah, but anyway, we don't have to go into that right now. I'm on Magnolia.
Okay.
And I've been cutting, in fact, it's come around in a circle to where I did the property, and now I'm back to where I started to do more cutting. So anyway, it's been good.
Great. Well, good to see you, Christine. And I know we are all trying to save bandwidth. So I'm fine with people kind of, you know, not doing video the whole time. So Carl, who looks like he has an awesome looking dog there.
Hey there. I'm Carl Linden. My partner, Rebecca, is listening in as well. And we live up on Old Stage Road. We moved up from Boulder in December and wanted to be part of the Wildfire Partners because we saw a lot of people with signs all over the place that were part of the program. So we got an inspection with a great inspector and did a bunch of log mitigation and cleared around our house and all that kind of stuff. And I had a question about stacking wood and best practices around that, because we do want to have a nice, you know, bit of fires this winter for warmth and all that. So looking forward to learning more about the program and getting our final inspection hopefully set up in the next couple weeks as well.
Great. Yeah, I saw it was so funny, Carl. I got your email, and we were just talking about that. Abby and I were about firewood, and we got your email. Like, what a perfect question. So that is really good. Okay, so we have got two more. Chris, I don't know how to say the last name. Is it Riker?
Riker, maybe?
Maybe.
Riker. Yeah, he had it right.
Okay.
Yeah, I live over in Coal Creek Canyon. We've lived up here since about 2002, but in a different county up here until about 2013. So.
Great, great. Well, welcome, Chris. And then we have Catherine.
Yes, I am not doing the video because I'm on my phone.
Yep.
But yep. I'm over on Mountain Pines.
Okay.
Which is off Sugarloaf.
Great. Well,
I love that we have pretty much every corner of the county represented here. It's fun.
We really do, don't we, Abby? Yeah.
Yeah, we do.
So it was really funny because Abby and I were talking because we of course, want to do your questions, and we will address all questions. And again, I want to just make sure that there's no – okay, so somebody just said my speaker's not working. I'm listening. Perfect. Oh, and he's in Allen's Park, Jonathan.
Oh, nice.
We do have every part of the county represented. That's fantastic. But we all also have some things in mind, and the thing we wanted to definitely get in, which Carl was so timely with his question, was to talk about firewood because, and how it's really strange because we talked about this when it was 90 degrees, Abby, remember? When
yes, yeah, which was just a few days ago.
And then the snow came in, like it was kind of like, you know, perfect for our discussion. So we're definitely going to cover that and talk a little bit about firewood. Abby, anything you want to specifically talk about, or do you want to just kind of talk a little bit about that and then open it up for questions?
Well, and I do want to get to Jonathan's questions, which I don't know if you remember what they are.
Yeah,
but
I have them. Yeah. So
that looks like someone's also looking for mistletoe. Why don't we just jump into it? Why don't we start with the question about firewood? Because I know there were a couple of people with that. So.
Okay. Hey, Carl, do you want to ask your question, or do you want me to read it out for everyone?
My question was mainly we know we shouldn't have wood stacked on our porch, obviously. We got that cleared off during the inspection. And we know we should have it about 30 feet away from the house, from what I understand. I wanted to get clarity on that, but can it be near another tree? Is it dangerous? You know, kind of what's the best way to stack it? You know, those kinds of questions just in general about placement to make sure it's not a fire hazard.
So I'll sort of jump in and then Leslie, you can add your thoughts. But a few things about, 30 feet or more from the house. So I guess thinking about it more sort of on a practical level, you may have a pile that's nearer to the home and then your main pile that's further away from the house. And if you're going to have it on your deck or someplace super close to your house, you definitely don't want to have it just exposed because, Leslie, you and I were talking about this, like, is there a month of the year that we have not had a wildfire in Boulder?
I do not think there's been a month of the year in Boulder County that we have not had a wildfire. Yeah,
yes.
And I'm sure everyone here has been watching the news, following the news, Colorado, California, all over the West. And California season used to be starting right now, remember? Back in the good old days, this was when their wildfire
even
started.
Even like October, November, and now.
Yeah. Not anymore. So, year round. So proceed, Abby.
So, So if you do want to have some close to your house, you want it to be in a protected container of some kind. And the one that I recommend if you're talking about a small amount of firewood would be like one or two metal trash cans, or we actually had a great idea, didn't we, Leslie?
This is where we were saying, please don't be shy about great ideas you have come upon on your own, because this great idea came from a homeowner where one of our mitigation specialists was doing the assessment. And they, if you're familiar with the tank, the water tank that you use to water stock, like horses or cattle or whatever, it's kind of a long oval shape, I guess, is how I would describe it. So this homeowner had taken this stock tank, this water tank, and converted it to a firewood storage for their house. I thought that was genius. I mean,
yeah.
So So that's another option. And then Abby, like, if you don't like the idea of metal, are there other things that people can use for that non-combustible storage?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen some nice examples of people building boxes out of hardy plank. You could put like a little roof shingles on the lid of a box. You know, basically any non-combustible material that you can think of. So I've seen people use, well, this is metal also, but those sort of toolboxes that they put on the back of pickup trucks. You know, and sort of a little bit lower down on the absolute safety level, but if you do feel like you have to have a larger pile of wood on your deck, you can also try covering it with a welding blanket. They're sort of like a heavy metalized tarp that are designed for welders so that they can protect the surfaces around where they're welding. So that's sort of that part of the answer. When it comes to like your main fire storage area, it's you can stack under trees if those are aspen trees, but not under conifer trees, because you don't want the firewood pile to be that ladder fuel that is going to take fire up into the canopy of the trees, particularly if they're, you know, really just 30 feet away from your house. You know, if you have piles of firewood, if you have a large property and you have, you know, little sections of firewood way back in your zone 3, yeah, you know, maybe it's okay if that's just completely the only thing to do with it is to leave it in the forest and it has to be under trees. But definitely in zone 1 and zone 2, you want to have it at least 10 feet from the drip edge of the trees if possible, so not under the canopy at all. And ideally, you'd have the firewood either uphill from your house, number one best practice, or if you can't achieve that, like to the side of the house is better than having it downhill from the house, just because fire is going to burn uphill when it's burning.
So does everybody, when she says zone 1 and zone 2, is everybody familiar with kind of what that means? You know, so zone 1 is that zone closest to your house. That's the first 30 feet. And then 30 to 100 is the zone 2. So that when we're using those terms, I mean, that's what we're referring to. So, yeah, ideally the firewood would be, you know, yeah, outside of zone 1 or right on the edge of zone 1 or whatever. So, or you can be like me, Abby, and you just don't have any firewood. You just give it away to everybody.
Yeah, and that's great if you don't heat with it. But, and, you know, Percy actually had a great tip here, too, that he said – they put it in a wheelbarrow and wheel it up to their house, and that way if something happens, they can just move it off-site or, I suppose, indoors really easily. And I've seen neighbors of mine who do that, too. They have a wood shed, and they just go get their wood. As far as, like, long-term storage of your wood, a wood shed is a great idea. You know, I've seen everything from an actually closed shed. Like, I would recommend if you're buying something like a, you know, one of those metal kit sheds that you can put together pretty quickly, something that has doors that close completely solid so that embers couldn't get in there during a wildfire. And I think that would be a great option. If you're stacking wood, I like the idea of like the very bottom course being some cinder blocks. I've seen people construct these great wood storage things where they have like a bunch of cinder blocks and they just lay some 2x4s and then they pop some metal posts out of the end of it and
kind of like a pallet
in between. You can, but of course a pallet could catch fire. They right. also do make those plastic pallets, so if you can get your hands on right. some of those, that might be a better option.
I have a great idea for how to get my wood that I don't need to my house. So we have.
How are you going to do that, Leslie?
Well, okay, I'm going to tell you because I bet nobody's ever thought of this. You know, this could be my Shark Tank moment right here.
Yeah.
So we have a dog run cable, you know, that runs between the deck. And I could just put a little trolley thing, you know, and just run the trolley back and forth
That's a good idea.
You know, load my wood and then just kind of like a zip line to your, you know, along to your house.
Yeah, or if you had an old ore cart, you could like load that up and scoot it to your house. So
I like it. Okay.
So do you guys feel like we've covered this thoroughly enough, or are there some
questions? You asked a question. Are you good with that?
Yeah, I think it's pretty good. I think maybe storing, like kind of bringing wood up to the deck and storing it in some garbage cans or bringing it inside as you need it just as an intermediate thing makes a lot of sense. It's nice to have that kind of initial just one or two burns worth right near your house and then.
Yes, especially when you get those 3-foot upslope storms in March where like trying to get to the firewood pile could take you all day and to get back.
The main thing was where to store it, because we have a lot of nice like 100-year-old pines that have actually the first branches are up 30 feet at least, and it's just a lot of space there that's it's hard not to store it within a few 10-20 feet of those. So I was just curious about that, how proximate to those nice old trees that we can actually be with still being protected and not have a problem. So that was my concern and thought. And,
yeah.
I'm still not sure how to do that. I have to go further away.
I mean, that's where something like the welding blanket might make sense for you. If you do feel like you have crown separation from those trees to your home in case they do ignite, but then also if you feel like that's the only real place on your property to store wood, then just have a cover over it that would prevent it from quickly catching fire and make sure it's elevated. The bottom course is elevated off the ground so that if embers are blowing, they're not going to directly hit the wood.
Yeah.
We get to nice to hear some interesting ways to stack wood. And as far as like, I like the cinder block idea.
Yeah.
Keep it off the ground and then having some cinder boards and some poles or something like that.
Leslie, do we have those pictures? I know I have some photos. I don't know what exactly made it onto the website. But
I don't think we have the cinder block, but for those who don't know, and I'm going to type it in the chat. So we do have on our website, we have a photo gallery. And so if you go under for homeowners, that's where you'll find that photo gallery. And we have like great visual photos of what different people have done for some of these things that it can, for me, I'm very visual, and I think it helps a lot. So I would encourage you to go there if you haven't. So, Abby, I love this question that Jonathan asked us, some two really good questions. And since he doesn't have audio, I'm going to read them.
He does, but let me just super quickly circle back to what Rodney asked, because his is about wood storage.
Okay.
So I just want to kind of get to that before we move on to another topic. But
okay.
He said, what about having wood in a woodshed that is closer to the house? And that's fine as long as that structure is not a fire hazard. So if it's a shed that's 20 feet away from your house or even 15, just make sure it's enclosed. And if the building itself is made out of wood or some combustible siding, have like, 4 to 6 inches of maybe, oh my gosh, I'm losing my words here.
Flashing.
Thank you. Of flashing at the base. Sorry, it's a few hours later.
Yeah, the other thing that I was thinking about too is I often think about those open woodsheds that are kind of like lean-tos, Abby. Mm-hmm. And that's the one thing I always caution people about is you definitely want to have it sealed tight so that embers can't get inside. Yeah.
Right. And if you do feel like you need to leave some venting in there, just make sure that you have that 1/8-inch metal screening, for instance, around the top of it or something. Just
otherwise known as
hardware cloth. Thank you for pointing that out. I'd forgotten.
Yes. We've had a lot of questions from people like, where do I find 1/8-inch metal screening? And we did a little hardware store shopping trip and we found out that it's actually known as hardware cloth. So if any of you have that on your reports as something to do to use 1/8-inch metal screening, it is known as hardware cloth. And we can tell you that McGuckin's sells it in bulk. So if you're looking for a resource for that. Okay, so is that all our wood questions? Did we get them all? Hopefully we did.
I think we did so far.
Okay, Great. So I am going to jump to Jonathan's questions because I thought these were some really good questions. He actually had a two-parter. So I'm going to start with, how dangerous are flammables such as curtains, lampshades, bedsheets, papers inside by the window? Great question.
Great question. And I think there's like a misconception that's pretty widespread that radiant heat can actually penetrate through your window and catch your curtains on fire. That is actually fake news, as we call it these days. But or more to the point, it's just a misunderstanding. There has been quite a bit of fire science around this, and Steve Quarles, who actually came and did some of our earlier education for our team, has been sort of at the forefront of that science. And the windows will fail prior to the contents of the home igniting is the answer.
Correct. So your bigger danger is that your windows will crack and fail, and then the fire will get in, or embers will blow inside, or
Or that radiant heat at that point will be, you know, have more access to your house and will, you know, spark the contents. But so, you know, that's why it's important to make sure that defensible space is, you know, well maintained near your windows, and particularly the older the window is and the thinner the glass and the fewer panes you have, the more vulnerable those windows are. So
I had someone ask me about, like, are there windows that can withstand greater heat? And do double pane windows withstand greater heat? So I'm going to just throw that at you, Abby. So
The first answer is yes. There are windows that withstand greater heat. And, you know, the ones that withstand heat the best are called tempered windows. I think that's an annealing process or something that they go through. And they're designed to be more heat resistant. And, for instance, in our Boulder County building code, any, like, French door or something where the glass comes straight down to the ground, those are required to be tempered glass. I could geek out about this for, I'm sure, way longer than anyone wants to listen to.
And I'm guessing they cost more money, too. Yeah, for tempered.
Yes, and they do cost more money. And then the more you pay, the more the other factor that's, you know, a big factor in that is the thickness of the glass. So the thicker the glass is, the more time it'll resist heat. And then when it comes to, like, single versus double or triple or quadruple, you are adding a couple of different factors. When you get into a double pane window, because you have a pane, you have another pane, you have gas in between. So two things happen in a fire. If the heat is intense enough to crack the outer pane, I've been told that the pressure from that gas releasing actually helps repel the flames away from the interior window. Plus, you still have a window there. So, you know, it takes a lot more effort and intensity for that window to break. And similarly, if there's a firebrand that's blowing, that's actually, like, large enough to crack the window, once again, you still have a second window. And then I assume you add a third pane and a fourth pane, and you get all the more protection.
Makes sense. Okay, so Jonathan had one more question, and I see another wood question. So we're not quite done with wood storage. So I will finish with Jonathan's question, and we'll jump back to wood storage. Is it better to turn off the gas main? And I would also add a second part to this question from Jonathan, but his says, is it better to turn off the gas main when vacating a house or leave it open to feed the generator for backup electricity to run the water pump that supplies the outdoor spigots? And then my piece I added to that is, if everyone else, if you're like me, you probably have a propane tank, you know, and so, you know, that's another one to think about, is like whether it's the main propane tank or the little one you use for your barbecue or whatever. So Abby, thoughts on this?
Well, you know, I saw that question a day or so ago, and as I've already told all of you, I'm like, I drove from Boulder to, I didn't tell you I drove, but I've driven from Boulder to Maryland, and when I left, you know, 5 or 6 days ago, it was still really hot, and I kind of agonized about this question for myself, but I reached this conclusion, and I'll sort of share my logic about it, which is, I think you should turn, if you're evacuating, you should definitely turn off your gas and your propane, like your yard bomb style propane. I think your barbecue propane, you should turn it off every time you're not barbecuing.
That's what I do.
And the reason behind that is that I was thinking about this because I was like, well, then maybe your generator, which is set to automatically go on, will turn on, and then the hose will be accessible to somebody to come save your house. Well, if you've evacuated, hopefully your neighbors have evacuated, and there really isn't going to be anybody there to use that hose. So that's where I came with turn it off, because if the firefighters come, they should have some water with them, and they're also perfectly capable of turning your gas back on and starting your generator if they feel like they need to. So, yes, it's certainly like it's a little counterintuitive because you do feel like, oh, and, you know, we did actually leave our hose connected, and then we had to call a neighbor when we heard about the snow and say, go turn it off, please, or disconnect it so it doesn't freeze. But, yeah, I think turn everything off if you remember to. But when I live in the 4 mile fire area, and I will admit that was not the top of my mind when we were evacuating for that fire, and we left our power on, and the firefighters did come and turn it off again. And then before they allowed us to turn it back on, they actually had sent people out to inspect all of the connections and everything.
And that's a really good point, Abby, because part of my background is I worked as a park ranger with the National Park Service, and I got my wildland firefighting credential and, you know, got to go on a couple small fires. And I can tell you the engines and the water that we use is going to be much more effective on a fire than your garden hose. And so, yeah, if the firefighters are defending your house, yeah, that's going to be what they're going to use is what they have with their equipment. And as you said, if for some reason they deem it worthy, they'll turn it on. But I think that makes really good sense. So I am going to jump back to this wood storage question. Because I want to get Chris's question in, because he asked it early on, and then I'm going to jump back to the wood storage question. I'm going to jump around here a little bit, but I want to make sure we get everybody's question in. Chris, did you want to ask your question, or would you like me to read it, or about mistletoe?
Yeah, I can ask. So we have, we're in Boulder Heights. We're on an acre and a half, and houses are, you know, we can see our neighbors and things, and there's this fantastic line of ponderosas that are right between my house and my neighbor's house that we don't want to lose that. But they are, you know, fairly infested with mistletoe. We've had several arborists come out and say, yeah, they're going to die eventually, sort of thing. So their suggestion and, you know, the suggestion has generally been, hey, plant something else, let it come up, and then when you have to take those trees down, you have something else there. But so looking at CSU's kind of guidance on mistletoe is plant a different species that the mistletoe won't grow on, which one of the suggestions or the other one, the, you know, the other trees that we have around here, there's a few firs, but it's almost entirely ponderosas. Mm-hmm. But one thing my neighbor mentioned is that firs are way more susceptible to wildfire than pondos. And I'm wondering if there is a certain type of tree that might be suggested that maybe a middle ground here.
Yeah. I mean, the middle ground is always aspen trees. But
or something deciduous. I don't know how high he is. So, Chris, do you have aspen?
Well, Boulder Heights is that's probably around somewhere between 7 and 76.
Yeah.
I'm guessing.
We're at 7,200 here, and it's mm-hmm. there are no deciduous trees around here. It's right. all conifers.
Are you more of a south facing slope, Chris? I'm just curious. Is it a little hotter?
We face east.
Face east. Okay.
Yeah, I mean this is a tough question, and I mean I feel your pain because I mean I live in Sunshine, the old town site of Sunshine, so I'm sort of just right over the hill from you, other side of the radio towers, and
sure.
have the same problem. There's a lot of mistletoe in the neighborhood, and I guess I might try a bit of a scattershot approach and try a couple of different things. I think the Doug fir are doing well in our area, so I definitely would suggest including those. They are less fire resilient, so again, I wouldn't plant anything like super close. I mean, ideally you wouldn't plant anything really within 30 feet of your house, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. The other thing that I've seen, which are not indigenous to our particular latitude, but are sort of indigenous to Colorado, and I've seen some beautiful ones in your neighborhood, are white firs. So they're not a local species, but they're just beautiful, and they seem to like hold moisture pretty well. Like any of these trees, you're going to have to water a bunch to get them established.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could try aspen. I mean, they will certainly grow. I've got a few that I'm starting to try to get established at my house. You know, I'd say sooner than later, because with climate change, it's only getting warmer. So, and they do like it a little bit cooler. But if you're able to water them, you might be able to get them established too. And those you could plant actually like in between so that they'd be closer to the house, because there's no sort of distance. Like they actually will help shield your home from fire, so it's good to plant them between the house and the conifers.
Okay. And they're the most fire resistant. That's the other thing why we really encourage aspen, is because, you know, in terms of something that won't ignite easily, I mean, you know, it's just a great species for that. So, okay, we've got another comment here. So, did that answer your question, Chris, or do you
I think so. Okay. I think so. So the suggestion sounds like it's maybe look at some white firs and some aspens, and Doug
well,
firs
and,
might be
and
a little
Doug
more.
Fir for sure. If you know, especially if they're getting established on their own. I mean, it's certainly a lot easier to just nurture a tree that's already started than it is to plant a tree.
Sure.
And yeah, just keep on top of your watering.
So Chris. Okay. Oh, Chris, are you finished? Did you have a follow-up?
Yep. No, I think I'm good.
Okay, great. Because we have another Chris Reichard. And you had a question about another option for firewood storage, or a suggestion. So go ahead if you want to throw that out there.
Yeah, I don't know if they use it for firewood storage, but I've seen people around me. They seem to use the shorter length shipping containers for kind of like an outbuilding. And they seem to be made of metal with almost like a kind of like a garage door type door. I didn't know if you guys had any experience with that as kind of a good option for firewood storage, or I would assume it's non-combustible.
Yeah,
that's a great option, I think.
Yeah.
They're kind of, they don't look the greatest, I guess. But.
No, but it seems like it could work.
If you have an artistic bent, you could paint it or something. I mean,
like it.
No, I think that's a great idea. Those actually have, you know, when we were building our house, we rented one to put our stuff in while we were sort of in between. And they actually have a pretty solid gasket on the door. So the only thing that might be an issue with that is if somehow like you need to vent it, in which case I'd say, you know, you could maybe cut out some small sections and screen them, and just so that you get a little air circulation if they're too tight.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's a
I love this.
Perfect idea. Yeah.
Jonathan had a comment, since he's without audio. I'm going to go ahead and read this. I would like to think that I could leave sprinklers on the decks with some benefit if someone nearby. And then he says, in a log home with 14-inch logs, I feel that the decks are the greatest risk. I also keep 50-pound backpack retardant if someone is around to spray the decks. With no one around, all this is less useful. So I guess he's saying he leaves things that perhaps firefighters or others could use to help defend his home. That's what it sounds like to me. Yes?
Abby? Yeah. And, you know, I mean, Jonathan, I little personal story about the 4 Mile fire. So at the time when the 4 Mile fire happened, which I think we all know was like almost exactly 10 years ago, like a few days ago anyway, it was, our fire district, Sunshine, so the fire starts in 4 Mile, and geographically above 4 Mile is Gold Hill and Sunshine, and we have had a mutual aid agreement with those fire districts, all three fire districts, and we train together, we do all this stuff together. And so when that fire broke out, Gold Hill and Sunshine's entire firefighting contingencies went down to 4 Mile to fight that fire and left in this mutual aid thing. And like other fire districts were supposed to backfill, but by the time the fire started raging, it just wasn't safe enough for them to send firefighters into our community. And so the homes were kind of left to stand or fall on their own merits. So it's not unreasonable to think that your house might not be defended. And I agree with you that the deck is going to be your biggest vulnerability. So I would say that if you have the time before you're evacuating to deploy that retardant onto your deck, that would be a great move. I also would very much advise you and everybody, and I mean, again, this was front of my mind when I left town for a couple of weeks, anything like seat cushions, little rugs, dog beds, little pieces of wood, pine cones, you know, clean that deck off as absolutely as well as you possibly can.
Yeah, don't leave anything non-combustible on your deck. Like, the story I told Abby that I went to a training with is they talked about somebody's deck caught on fire and the house caught on fire because they left a straw broom leaning against the wall. And the straw broom caught fire. So, yeah, for sure, when you're evacuating or leaving home, yeah, take all that, anything combustible off your deck.
And the other thing is, you don't have to leave your sprinklers going. Like, soak your deck down while you're still there. Put the fire retardant down. Have a plan. Work the plan. Get out. And, you know, bottom line, a house is a house. It's heartbreaking if it burns. But, you know, I mean, I've been through this with many, many of my neighbors. We lost 28 of the 55 houses on my road burned. So, you know, people pick their lives back up and they rebuild and they move on. And, you know, it's stressful and it's hard. And I don't mean in any way to make light or underplay it, but, you know, your life is irreplaceable. Your home is not. So,
yeah, your family, your pets. I mean, those are the things that are important. So my only thoughts are, don't delay, because sometimes there's a situation. We had a fire break out very close to us, and literally the police were at our door, and they were like, you need to leave right now. So, you know, when don't delay and, you know, put your family or your pets or whatever safety at risk, you know, better, yeah, yeah.
And then I know that all of you have been through the Wildfire Partners program, so I'm just repeating what you've already heard, but I really highly advise everybody to anything that you can get an electronic copy of, anything you can scan and save a copy of in the cloud, whether it's that once or twice in a lifetime photos that you have, or honest to God, the most important thing you could have an electronic version of is your insurance policy.
Mm-hmm.
because I had neighbors who ended up in litigation for years with their insurance company because they thought they had replacement value, and the company was like, no, you have X amount of dollars, and, you know, it just took a while for a meeting of the minds to happen. Honestly, I don't know exactly how it turned out, but they did rebuild a rather nice house, so I think they prevailed in the end. But yeah, you know, just as much as anything else, it's just the fewer things you have to worry about when that moment happens, if that knock on the door comes at 2 in the morning, the better off you're going to be. So I think we all are getting a rather unpleasant taste of what this can look like if you're thinking about a city the size of Boulder having to evacuate in 4 hours out there in Oregon. And, you know, let's just try to be as ready as we can be.
Yeah.
And be as safe as we can be.
So, Abby, I have a couple other questions that we got, which is very timely. So people sent in by email, and they said, is the wildfire season over now that it has snowed? Or when is wildfire season? Are there months that define the wildfire season? And the concurrent with that is, will they lift the fire ban now that it's snowed?
Well, I think you and I agreed that there was not a fire season since there's been a fire pretty much every month. I don't know about March and April. Those months might be a little safer. But
actually, March 2012. I'm going to bring this up.
Oh, yeah. See, they're right.
Guys, that was... my husband's a meteorologist, and so he has a weather station, keeps all the weather records. In March 2012, we did not have a single measurable precipitation for the entire month. Like, literally, it was bone dry. And while we didn't, I don't know if we had a fire in Boulder County, but I do know they had a fire in Conifer. And actually, some people lost their lives in that fire. So yeah, I would say even though March and April can typically be snowier months on any given year, who knows? You know, you can have those weird years where, like, that year, the precip just shut off the end of February, and that was it. And that was the year of the High Park fire and the Waldo Canyon fire. That was a pretty horrific fire year.
Right, that was. You're right. So, yeah, so we don't have a fire season for sure. And what was the other part of the question? I'm sorry.
So it said, will they lift the fire ban now that it has snowed?
I hope not is the answer. And I don't expect that they'll lift the fire ban. I mean, for a couple of reasons. I mean, one of the fire bans are enacted based on multiple factors. But one of the main factors is the water content of the vegetation in the county. And I think that given how incredibly dry it's been, like, one snowstorm is not going to, you know, appreciably raise the moisture level of the vegetation. So I wouldn't expect that they would lift the ban completely. I do think that there may be a point in the fall when we come out of stage two and go back to stage one. But I, you know, that's something that the sheriff's department is sort of tasked with keeping track of and being in charge of. And so we'll just have to wait and see.
And I would just encourage people, it is the sheriff's office that decides these things and also notifies the public. So I actually follow the sheriff's office on my Twitter feed because they even post, like, red flag warnings, you know, if there's a red flag warning, which, you know, for people, you've probably seen that the Weather Service usually issues those. But that means, you know, kind of usually hot, dry, windy conditions where it's very likely that if there's some spark, then a fire is probably going to take off. So, you know, it's good to know those things because I know on a red flag day, I want to be, like, just a little bit more careful. You know, I mean, you know, maybe I don't chainsaw on a red flag day or something like that, you know. So the sheriff's office are the people that determine that. They did start stage one fire restrictions due to COVID. So I would imagine since we're in the same issues we are in the spring in terms of the pandemic, I would imagine they wouldn't lift that. But that's me just presupposing, but that's my guess. We are getting towards the end, and I saw one more question, so I want to get this in. Jonathan asked, can a line of aspen, and he put wet, parentheses, wetter trees, serve as an actual fire break?
So that is actually, I guess, hinges a little bit on the word can, and also a little bit on the word line. But I'd say that's a qualified yes. And I saw that in, Leslie, I don't know if you saw this in the Cold Springs fire.
Yep.
I don't think you were with our team yet, but after that fire in 2016, our Wildfire Partners team went up and toured the burn area, and there was a home that we saw where they had a grove of aspen trees, not literally a line, but, you know, 100 feet or so of aspen, deep of aspen trees around the house. And the fire literally, like, I'm sorry, you guys are looking at me opposite of my direction. It burned up to that line of aspen. It burned, like, the fence, and it burned some of the outer trees, and it literally, like, worked its way around the house following the edge of the aspen grove. So, I don't think that in Chris's situation, it didn't sound like he necessarily had space to put 100 feet a deep section of aspen trees in there. But I have read some fire science that came out of these fires from 2018 in California, where they were talking about sometimes, like, the plantings that people had, not literally right up against the house, but, you know, a line of shrubs or something like that, that were actually sort of deflecting the blowing embers. So if you imagine moist green plants preventing the embers from blowing all the way to the base of the house. So that's sort of the concept. Like, when the fire is hot enough, it certainly will burn aspen. It's not like those trees don't catch fire. And Leslie, you live on Ridge Road. I mean, you've seen that, right?
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, with the area where Abby's talking about was where the Cold Springs fire breached Ridge Road, and there it was thick with aspen. I mean, it was thick with aspen. But the thing I keep thinking about, Abby, is this. One of the statistics about Four Mile Canyon was 83% of homes were ignited through ground or ember showers. So, mm-hmm. And 83% of the homes destroyed in that fire, ground fire or ember showers. What I think about is this, is like when a conifer catches fire, you get that torching, crowning, you know, running fire. You know, that's very, lots of radiant heat, you know, throwing lots of embers. And I think in aspen grove, yes, they're burned, but you don't get that explosion of, you know, fire that you see in conifers. So
Yeah, in fact, I think it's sort of, if you think about, like, the conifers, the oil in the conifer needles is adding fuel to the fire, where the aspen trees are moist enough that they're sucking some of the heat out of the fire. It's taking a lot of energy,
yes,
to
correct,
get those trees to ignite. So
right,
that's sort of the difference between the two types. And when I say aspen, I mean, that's our native species. But if you had an apple tree planted in your yard, or a line of cottonwoods because you live on a creek or ditch or something. Same exact example. It's deciduous versus coniferous.
And Chris had a great comment. He said, the briefings for Cameron Peaks that aspens are burning because it is so dry, but it's rare due to how dry it is up there. Yeah, the state is in drought right now, and the varying degrees of drought. So the entire state of Colorado is in drought, and some parts of the state are in an extreme drought. So, you know, yeah, this is kind of really pretty, the worst kind of conditions that we had prior to the snowstorm. So, I see one final, I'm going to just give one final, answer here, because we're winding down here, and then I'm going to ask for burning desires. So Jonathan asked, do you keep a fire extinguisher in your car? Did you hear this story, Abby, about the person in Boulder Canyon who ignited, like, set the bush on fire on purpose? Did people hear about this?
Yes.
I saw it on Nextdoor.
Yes. Yes. So somebody intentionally tried to ignite vegetation in Boulder Canyon. And so for that reason, yes, I have a fire extinguisher. And yes, I would say that is a really good, for not, I mean, it could be vegetation, it could be your car catches on fire, but I would say that
is outside.
What's that? I think Catherine said something.
No, that was, sorry, that was the dog doing something.
Oh, well, good for the dog. Abby, do you have one in your car?
And not at this moment, because I cleaned everything out of my car. I usually keep more of a shovel in my car, but I think a fire extinguisher would be a great idea, and probably a little more practical than a shovel. One thing about fire extinguishers to just bear in mind, and maybe this is why I don't do it, because I'm a little bit more of a, like, time gets away from me person, but you do have to get them either maintained or replace them every year.
True. There's a tag usually, and there's you need to, yeah, you do need to get them maintained. That's a really good point. So we have like a minute left. Does anyone have a final burning desire? Because otherwise we're going to wrap things up. But, you know, it's been great having everyone here tonight. I think it's funny because, Abby, our first one was in April in snow, and we had a robust group, and we've had so I think it must be something with snow. Everyone shows up for
maybe because they're not out there raking. So
we do have a question for you all, and I'm just going to show you this on Zoom. You can do like a little reaction thing with a thumbs up. I'm going to just do it on mine. Everybody saw that. It's done at the bottom of the toolbar on the right. We want to ask you this question because we don't know whether we should continue these events past October or not. So if you say, yes, I would like to still keep hearing about this through the winter months, give us a thumbs up. And if you're like, no, I'm going to be out skiing, and does everybody see how to do that? Yeah, little reactions. Oh, I see some thumbs up there. Okay. All right. Well, because, yeah, we weren't.
Can I ask a follow-up question on that with people's thumbs, which is, so we were sort of thinking about whether we should move this to like late morning kind of coffee break type of thing. Do people like the idea of, I know this has to be a thumbs up or not, so I guess I'll have to ask it as a yes or no. So the two options would be kind of leaving it where we have it Wednesday evenings or going to sort of a more of a daytime thing, and I'll go with, do people like the daytime option? Thumbs up for the daytime, and if you don't put your thumb up, I'll assume evening is better.
All right, and Jonathan says, thank you so much to everyone.
Okay. I want to thank everybody. It's been really lovely seeing everyone, and, you know, It's so nice to hear of everyone doing all this work on their places. It seems like everyone's had a busy summer.
They're inspiring me, Abby.
Mm-hmm.
I feel inspired.
I love it. I have to say, I have never done so much fire mitigation as I did getting ready to leave town with the weather conditions that we've had. I was definitely concerned. I'll say that. I'm happy it's here.
So we're not out of the woods yet, guys. So even when we had our snow, I reading the weather forecast, sounds like we're going to get hot, not necessarily hot, but sunny and dry. So keep on keeping on. And for those of you who are close, please call us and get your final inspection and get your yard sign before the winter months set in. We would love to do that for you. And if you have other questions that pop up for you afterwards, you can always email those to info@wildfirepartners.org, or you can call us on our main phone number. So it's been great chatting with everybody tonight. Thank you so much, and I hope you guys have a great evening.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.